Hello, everybody, and welcome back to 100 Years, 100 Movies. Today is day 3 of the season of The Witch, and today we're going to be talking about horror in the 1920s. Now, the 1920s, like I said, we're talking about 100 years ago. So while there was plenty of horror movies in the 20s, unfortunately, a lot of them have been lost, or they're rare and hard to get to. And in doing my kind of going back and trying to find movies, I had a hard time. And part of the reason that I ended up switching up the format, I think, is because of specifically the 1920s, and the 1930s. Because while in the 30s we had the Universal Monsters, I've talked a lot about them, and I didn't want to end up having just another 6 episodes talking about the Universal Monsters, even though I love talking about the Universal Monsters. In any case, the other thing with the 1920s is that I kind of talked about some of the most major ones already. I've already talked about The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, Nosferatu, Haxum, Faust, maybe probably throw Pandora's Box in there as well. These are all, and I'm pretty sure I talked about Metropolis, which it was more science fiction, but you can kind of, it's horror tangential. So these are, not to take away from those movies are great. Wonderful movies, definitely worth checking out, but I didn't want to just rehash those movies. That is to say, though, the great thing about the 1920s, and one of the things that I love, is that we get horror movies from, like, all over Europe, and it's not just American horror movies. A lot of the ones that have survived, a lot of the ones that are still impactful today are from Europe, from different parts of Europe, too, not just, like, I don't know, England or something. So I wanted to highlight a couple of different movies from this time period. And I wanted to go back real quick and just kind of talk about like Nosferatu and The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari and some of these movies that came out of Germany. These movies are great and definitely worth checking out, giving another view. And a lot of the same sort of stylistic choices and some of the camera tricks that were used in those movies are used in some of the movies that we're going to be talking about today. So like I said, some of these movies from the 20s are difficult to find. However, the ones that I've chosen are actually pretty they're much more easier to find. I mean, I'm not going to say that they're super easy, but if you do some quick Google searches, you can find them. A lot of them are on YouTube as well, if you just want to watch them on YouTube, which is always helpful. But I wanted to start off with The Phantom Carriage, which came out in 1921. This was directed and stars Victor Sjostrom, who I want to say, if I remember correctly, he is in Wild Strawberries. And yes, he double checked. He was in Wild Strawberries, which I had talked about before when talking about Ingmar Bergman. And The Phantom Carriage basically follows death. I mean, it's this ghost in a carriage, played by Victor Sjostrom, who is walking around with a scythe. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. It's death. But there's a lot of really great special effects in this movie for the time period. And even, like, I don't want to make it sound like, oh, like, it looks like shit now, because they actually look really striking even to this day. But thinking about the limitations that were put on in the 1920s, they're fascinating to see. Basically end up following death and on kind of as it goes along, picking up the souls of the dead, and death ends up running into a man and kind of makes him reflect on his life. But like I said, the special effects are just really great. Like, kind of this there's a lot of shots of ghosts on film. Like, there's really no other way of putting it. I mean, it's these wonderful shots of people, like, you know, the death himself walking through walls, walking through doors, closed doors, and looking spectral, and then, like, going up to the bodies of people. And, like, in one scene, like, he literally lifts up a dead person while the the quote-unquote body. So he's like lifting the spirit of this dead person up, and the body's still on the ground. And it's striking. And there's a lot of great stuff like that in this movie that is just a visual treat. Like, it's one of the things that I really love about watching these old movies is just how inventive and how the things that they would, that the lengths they would go to in order to get these shots, I think it's just fucking great, and I love it. But this movie itself was also, it's inspirational. It Ingmar Bergman, who I talked about before, you know, he talked a lot about how The Phantom Carriage really, really affected him. And if you see a lot of his movies, a lot of those themes of kind of life and death and the meaning of life, there's a lot of parallels to it. The other really crazy thing about watching this movie is if you watch this alongside The Shining, there is some straight up like shit that mirrors, that is mirrored in The Shining. Like there's a scene where they're busting through a door with an axe, you know, and no one shouts, you know, here's Johnny, which wouldn't have made any sense in the 1920s, but still, like, you can see those parallels. And the great thing about this too is because these are silent movies, you know, you don't have to worry about it, that it's made in a different language. It's just your subtitles, and you know the subtitles change. But this movie is really, really good. It's one of the more interesting movies, and just something that I think is very indicative of the kind of movies that were being made, you know, in Sweden and in countries that we don't think about as much when we think about horror. Another movie that I wanted to touch on, speaking, as I mentioned earlier, about German Expressionism, is Dr. Mabuse the Gambler. I believe it's pronounced Dr. Mabuse. I don't know. Maybe it's Dr. Mabuse. In any case, this was directed by Fritz Lang, who, you know, of course, was better known for having directed M, and I believe he also directed Metropolis. Yeah, those are probably the two best known movies that he's done. But Fritz Lang is an interesting character just in that a lot of his movies really kind of commented on the shit going on in Germany at the time, and obviously in the 1920s, this is before before the Nazi party took over, but there was a lot of issues going on. And this movie is interesting because even though it's a horror movie, it's a horror movie in the way that something like Nightmare Alley is a horror movie. This is really a crime story that happens to have like horrific elements and supernatural elements in it. And it's very interesting. So, we follow the, criminal Dr. Mabuse and his gang as they're trying to, pull off another scheme to, kind of take over Berlin and be able to run the city from the shadows, you know, and kind of the sort of story that we would see in, you know, a gangster movie in the 1930s and a few years later, you know. But it really kind of revolves around Dr. Mabuse kind of playing a card game with this young man and basically stealing all his money. But there's a lot of just like really interesting ways in how things are shot. Like there's one sequence where it's all these like ephemeral sort of spectral shots of people playing a game at the same time, and it's the same person over and over again. And it's really, really striking. And Fritz Lang always just, I think he is always kind of able to do these, he's not alive anymore, obviously, but he was always able to do these really interesting things in the way that he wanted to present movies. And while I feel that this particular movie, Dr. Mabuse, isn't as well known, and it actually has a sequel too, which is kind of cool. But yeah, it's one of those movies that I think people don't remember as much. I believe it was technically out of Hungary, not Germany, but still, I mean, these at the time period, both were basically interchangeable to a certain extent. Speaking just of just movies not from places you wouldn't expect, we also have also from Hungary, we have The Golem, which came out in 1920. And The Golem is based on Jewish folklore. And this is one of the first movies I could think of, like a Jewish horror movie. Like, and that's, to tell you the truth, that's something that there really isn't a lot of. A Gollum itself is actually not Gollum like from The Lord of the Rings. This is G-O-L-E-M. And if I remember correctly, in Jewish folklore, a golem is a clay creature that is brought to life in order to exact revenge on people that have, like, on those that have persecuted Jewish people, or to protect them, you know. And this movie kind of follows that. So we have this rabbi in the 16th century who creates a golem, and in order to protect, you know, the town that it's in. And the look of the golem itself is really interesting, because even though this movie's from the 20s, I feel that the look of the golem in particular is something that has kind of stuck around, and that still to a certain extent has had an impact on different mediums. And maybe it's just because I read a lot of comic books, and a lot of the early comic writers and artists, I'm thinking specifically of people like, you know, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby and Joe Simon, and they were Jewish. So I feel that a lot of maybe what I'm kind of picking up on is just the fact that, you know, they have a similar look, or they were inspired by the look of the golem itself. But this is another movie that it's just striking, and something that we don't really get to see much of nowadays, and just something that kind of out of blast from the past that's definitely worth your time. Another movie from the 20s that I wanted to kind of touch bases on is the unofficial first movie by Alfred Hitchcock. And I say unofficial because Hitchcock had actually done a couple of movies before that, although he kind of disowns them. But that's The Lodger, A Story of the London Fog, which came out in 1927. And The Lodger is interesting for a couple of things. First of all, this is 1927. Alfred Hitchcock, his career, you know, went on for like 40 more years. And there was already a lot of the hallmarks of what you would expect in a Hitchcock movie. In this first movie, we follow the titular lodger, who is someone who's staying in a town, who may be the serial killer known as the Avenger. So during this time that the movie starts, there is this murder spree of blonde women, and the only clue that the police have is that there's you know, this person refers to himself as the Avenger, and they always kind of have leave behind like a calling card and only murders blonde women. But being that this is Hitchcock, the really interesting thing is that Hitchcock himself has like this weird had this weird fascination with blonde women. I mean, you could see it in the casting of his movies, people like Tippi Hedren and wow, I'm blanking on their names. Fuck. Damn it. Well, fuck it. Whatever. All the actresses that came out in his movies, they were mainly blondes, you know, and they had a particular look to them. And I think it's something that if you look at his movies, he kind of explores a lot, but to even see it back in 1927, when he's much younger, is really interesting. The look of the Avenger himself, who is played by Ivor Novello, is striking too, because he wears a black brimmed hat and he covers his face with a scarf. This movie came out in 1927. This is the fucking Shadow, and the Shadow came out in 1930. I actually double checked those dates because I was like, wait a minute, did this rip off the Shadow, or did the Shadow rip this off? I feel like maybe I need to explain who the Shadow is. So the Shadow is this pulp hero from 1930s serials, comics, and radio TV shows up until the 40s. And there was a movie with Alec Baldwin that came out in the 1990s, which is pretty terrible, but kind of fun to watch in that it's terrible. But the Shadow himself, like, he has the same look. He's this guy in a black suit with a black brimmed hat, and he has this red scarf that he covers his face with, and he's a pulp hero, so he basically goes around just killing people, murdering people left and right. But he has the power to cloud men's minds so they can't see him, hence the Shadow. He's a very interesting pulp character, one that a lot was taken from for Batman. But it's just interesting to see, maybe it's a coincidence, but to see that this character in this movie looks very, very similar to the Shadow. But I think this movie is also just really, really great to see because even though Hitchcock, you know, he's young and he's still learning and he's still getting better, there's already, like, this striking style to his movies. And so it's really interesting to see that. And, like, he plays with kind of the black and white of the movie, where, like, there's scenes that are kind of tinged more red. And this is something that other movies that didn't, like The Column, for example, had that. It's not something that Hitchcock came up with, but kind of like having filters where, like, the scene is blue or things like that. And I mean, the fact that this follows just a madman kind of murdering women in London, shades of Jack the Ripper in that too, it's interesting. It's definitely worth your time. I know this is a movie that's fairly easy to find. It's usually kind of packaged in Hitchcock, like, you know, serials, and I think it was, I want to say that Hitchcock himself actually remade it. I know that there's a larger movie in the 40s, maybe Hitchcock didn't remake it, but there's definitely a remake of it. The last movie that I wanted to talk about is kind of like the proto Universal monster movie, and that's The Phantom of the Opera, starring Lon Chaney. And I know I've talked about The Phantom before, and I specifically talked about the Claude Rains one. The Phantom of the Opera is, it's one of those stories that just gets remade all the fucking time. And to be perfectly honest with you, I am always up for a remake of The Phantom of the Opera. The Phantom of the Opera is one of my favorite books. Second probably only to The Picture of Dorian Gray, which I had mentioned, you know, has only been made into a movie like twice. And, you know, The Phantom of the Opera, on the other hand, has been made plenty of times. Lon Chaney, as I mentioned, he plays the Phantom in this movie, and he is the man of a thousand faces. Like, the great thing about Lon Chaney, and I kind of wanted to just choose a Lon Chaney movie to talk about. I think the two movies that I want to say the two at least straight up horror movies that everyone thinks of when they think of Lon Chaney is Phantom of the Opera and The Mask of the Red Death. But his makeup is so just fucking great. Like, he has, like, this, like, in this, he almost looks like a skeleton ghoul-faced man. Like, I don't know how to describe it. It looks great. I mean, Lon Chaney himself, like, it's all, like, I honestly don't even know what, I can't picture Lon Chaney in my mind really well. Like, I can, like, he kind of looked like Lon Chaney Jr., so in a way I kind of can. But because he has all these, like, great makeups, it's, that was his calling card, you know? It's very much like Clayface in Batman comics, although you know, before he became Clayface, or the chameleon in Spider-Man comics, who's able to mimic anybody, you know. And not that he was making these makeups to look like other people, but it's just striking, and it's really great to see. And like I said, I'm always down for a Phantom of the Opera movie. Like, shit, there was one in the 80s with Robert Englund, which is just like a straight up, like, it's Robert Englund, so it's basically what if Freddy Krueger was Phantom of the Opera, and it is fucking gnarly. But in this movie, just the makeup alone is just worth checking out. Like, that's the great thing about Lon Chaney, and you can basically do no wrong with any of his movies, just to see, as I mentioned before, his physicality, the way he moves, just all those things, and as well are great to see. And just like those great makeups, like, I can't say enough about them. And if you're gonna see a Phantom movie, I mean, between this one and the one from the 40s with Claude Rains, is probably the better of the two. This one's in black and white, and it's silent, so it's a very different take on it, but definitely worth checking out. So, as I said, you know, the 20s had a lot of great things, a lot of great movies, but unfortunately, some of them are difficult to find. These five, though, shouldn't be that difficult if you're interested in them. They're worth your time just to see something different, a different take, and some things that maybe aren't as well known as some other later horror movies. So that's it for today. Thank you for listening. Hopefully you're enjoying this, and we'll see you tomorrow for day 4 of the Season of the Witch.